History repeating itself, we're not learning something.
This group is, by definition, a group of separate people put together around an ideal.
If you're not a liberal before you're 40, you don't have a heart. If you're not a Republican after 40, you don't have a brain.
We really need to change the climate here. Everybody's racist. Nobody's thinking of the little guy. We're thinking of the little guy and the transgender guy and the black guy and all the other guys. And we're the ones, and everyone else is the devil, and we should get rid of them.
The point is, everybody's right, except we're not trying to be right together.
If you think that it's all terrible, it's not all terrible. There is a ray of light here.
The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality?
Okay, listen, enough of that shit. This is a podcast, and we're going to find the solution to anti-Semitism, okay? We're going to stop that right here, right now, from this stinking basement. When we get to the bottom of this, we're going to read from this mystery book, which you're not going to find out about until the end of the series, and we're going to really entertain every perspective. We're not going to say, oh, you can't say this, you can't say that. No, we're going to say everything, because if we're not going to be able to talk about it, we're not going to be able to solve it. You know, we're going to really grab you in the kishke, and we're going to squeeze until we get something, right? Either a bowel movement or a freaking solution. We want to know what happened 3,500 years ago in Babylon that started this whole meshuggas, and we want to finish it here in 2020. That's it. I'm back in America. Wow. Can you believe it?
How long were you gone?
120 days almost.
Wow, so we started the podcast in a stinking basement in Brooklyn.
Right. Then
both went to Israel. I returned. You stayed for 100 and you got stuck.
I got stuck.
And now we're both back states.
And now we're both back in the States, yeah.
Well, it's the same story, actually. The story's only unfolded even more, what we see going on outside. It's like we're going to be reading in this book now from things that happened in the 19th century. And again, it's like just change the characters. It's almost the same story as we see going on in the news today.
You know, they say that history repeats itself. And I think, I have a feeling it's going to continue to repeat itself until we wake up and someone will say, whoa, let's just stop this craziness for a second and try to rise above it. You know, the funny thing is that is when I speak to people, when I see, you know, Jewish people, Jewish friends and also not friends, and also some ex-friends by now, when I talk to them about how Jews need to unite, it's written all over history, it's our greatest rule, right? Love thy friend as yourself, that'll... Like they all, you know, they agree that it's great. When I say it could stop anti-Semitism, they just shake their head like, whatever. Like, yeah, we should unite, but this has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. And then they turn around and continue to be disunited as before. Like maybe if we tried it, we'll do not National Day of Kindness. Let's do a year of unity.
Do you remember the... 9 dots on the paper, something you have to connect all the dots without lifting your pen.
Yeah, of course.
Right. So it's like that because it seems you have to think out of the box because as long as we stay inside of the normal system, it just seems so ridiculously unrealistic.
It is unrealistic. And I re-listened to an older episode which came out recently and we read that the story about... the Jews coming together to the temple 3 times a year.
Oh, I love that episode.
Such a love fest, right? I mean, that's a beautiful vision. That's a Jewish vision I would subscribe to, right? None of the other stuff. It's the prison of self-love. I also want to say that I don't think we're suggesting that we go back to some, you know, weird, antiquated notion of the Jews being priests in a temple, right? We're talking about the idea behind it. Playing this role of ministering to the ill relationships in humanity. That's a good job, I think. Right? I mean, it's, you know, much less headache than the usual running around, and you get to hang out with great people, and the more love you put in, the more love you feel. It's kind of like...
It's like before puberty and after puberty. It's like before you can't even comprehend, and then after, it's just so natural. At this point, it seems like it's something that, how could it ever possibly happen? And then when it does happen, it's, oh, it's, of course it's like this. It's so natural that it should be like this.
So natural. And I think you see it with people all over the world in different parallel situations. that we get stuck in a certain position, and then we, like, it happens to me when sometimes when I argue with my wife, right? You get stuck. You dig yourself a little hole, and instead of just coming, climbing out of it, you create more. You spend a lot of money and energy just to maintain your position in the hole, and everything you do is just to help you stay, distract you from the truth, from the little ladder that's standing there on the side of the hole that you can climb out and just start. And all of humanity is like that. Not just, in arguments between a husband and a wife. It's like we created something. It's clearly not great. And we spent so much energy trying to protect this and that and fight for this liberty or that liberty and all those silly liberties. We should say we're recording this on the day after 4th of July, 2020. People celebrate freedom, but they're not really celebrating freedom. They're celebrating these various liberties that they insist on fighting for. But the real freedom, the one that we are reading about in this book, by the way, if you're joining for the first time, reading from a mystery book about the potential role of the Jews, the function of the Jew in society, not the religious thing, the biological, the ethnic, the whatever you want, it's that quality, right? That quality called Jew from the word Yehudi, unity, Yehudi, unity. I think that freedom, the freedom from self-love, from that prison of self-love, this is a freedom that we can all unite around, fight for, champion, follow.
Yeah, you're getting super abstract on me. We're going to...
Yeah, yeah, let's... I don't know. So let's rewind. We're like in the end of the 19th century somewhere. We're looking for patterns, right? We're looking for patterns in history because if you connect the dots, you find a pattern, patterns repeat in nature. That's how nature works. It works in patterns. And if you can read the pattern, you can arguably try to do something else. You can try to evaluate where you are. We've seen this pattern where roughly we're like Eastern Europe, Russia, Jews left their homes in Spain, gradually migrated east, right? They're now, a lot of them have assembled in Eastern Europe, parts of Russia.
So the Russians kind of opened the doors to the Jews at this point, right?
Well, that's what the Tsar's trying to do. And let's read it because I think this paragraph really sets it up.
Okay, another benefit for the Russian authorities from opening the doors of academia to the Jews was that the new Maskilim, the Enlightenment movement, strove to become part of the Russian society. They now saw their own establishment of Orthodox Jewry as their enemy, instead of seeing the Russian government as their enemy. Alexander II succeeded, so the Jews kind of split there between the Enlightenment.
Yes,
okay, so
another split.
Alexander II succeeded in disintegrating the Jews precisely because he stopped fighting them and let them do what they wanted. Sounds like what happened at the temple. But ever since the ruin of the temple, whenever hatred overcame the nation and caused the Jewish people to perform a self-inflicted genocide, what most Jews want is to integrate themselves into their host culture. This was what we saw in 19th century Russia, the same process that unfolded before the ruin of the Second Temple, before the expulsion from Spain, before the Holocaust in Germany, and is unfolding now in America, also happened in 19th century Russia and ended with the pogroms, which we now call the storms in the South.
History repeating itself, we're not learning something. And I find it really interesting because as long as Jews maintain some level of unity, things go more or less fine. There's pressure from the outside. The pressure doesn't go away necessarily, but there's unity, there's a strength there. As soon as the pressure from the outside eases, the doors open, boom, I'm out of here.
You know what's also fascinating is that every time the Jews integrate, although it's kind of a little bit corrupted, they bring that quality of the unity into the society that they integrate into. Like today, for example, liberalism in America, that all genders should be included, that all races should be included, but it becomes so far-leaning.
Distorted it becomes.
Right. So the same thing here in Russia. It's interesting, though, because it's not just, looking back, we can say, oh, no, you're bad. But if we see it as more of a process of unfolding, that integration with the host society kind of brings that Jewish quality, like plants that Jewish...
That's exactly the thing. It's an inner quality. It's not a religious thing. It's none of those things. And we'll see that even here, there's these two streams in Judaism, right? The Hasidim, the ones that people, the one people call Orthodox here, but there are like a lot of different sects and streams in them, right? The ones that look Orthodox, they maintain that heavy religious diaspora looking look, right?
Yeah.
And the Maskilim, the enlightened, the ones who say, oh no, we don't need any of those things, right? So between these two, they both maintain the same ideas, and they both try to. They both think that they do. They're working for the good of the Jews, the good of humanity. It's so, like something within them.
So maybe it's premature. Probably it's premature now. But when this leftist group of Jews breaks off each time and integrates with the society, whether it's the Romans or the Spanish or the Russians, what is it that they are missing that prevents them from, because they come and they say, yes, everybody should be equal. You know, it shouldn't be someone at the top who controls. Everyone should have what they need. But every time it goes wrong and causes a civil war. And then, well, actually, first it causes strife internally, and then they weaken themselves, and then the oppressing nation,
because
the host nation oppresses them.
Because I think what the book is saying over and over, I every time I read it, is like, am I uniting with my brothers first, with the people around me before I'm going out? It's falling into this syndrome of trying to reform the world while, you know, your family is falling apart, right? Oh, I'm going out, I'm traveling, I'm going to the other side of the world, I'm feeding some hungry children. Like, but what about the hungry in your town? No, they're fine. I'm going to feed the hungry in Africa.
I remember reading in high school, I read this unauthorized biography of John Lennon. And he was such an idol for me. Like, you know, the song Imagine, it was like one of the first songs I figured out how to play on guitar and everything. And then I'm reading in this book, like, he hit Yoko Ono and stuff like that. I was like, wait, I don't understand.
Exactly. No one is a saint. We're all egoists. We're all in this together. We're trying to figure it out. But the problem is we're trying to do it for ourselves, by ourselves, or in small little groups, always excluding to the exclusion of someone else, right? This group is, by definition, a group of separate people put together around an ideal, right? They're not brothers, sisters, they're not from the same father, mother, they're not the same ethnicity, there's not even a Jewish DNA. They're trying to find it, but they can't, because they're united around an idea, an ideal. The entire system strives to move in that direction, and it has to start with a small group and then spread, right? Expand. Like all changes in nature, they start somewhere and then they take over the entire system. I think this is the question really that I keep struggling with. Can you do it? Can you bring unity to other people if you're not united among yourself?
Mm-hmm. Can you bring it with protests and guns and
exactly. I also want to say, I find myself like, we have to keep making these, adding these asterisks, these clauses in the contract, because if you just catch like a small part of an episode, you may think, oh, these guys, they're like crazy right-wingers, or oh, they're like crazy leftists, or they're crazy, they're Jew-hating Jews, or, you know, they anti-Semites, they're feeding the haters. They just like, no, we're trying to solve it. And by looking at things, sometimes it's painful. It's like, right, opening a bandage and looking into this wound, and it's purple and stinky and pussy, but you have to do it.
An animal can tell the difference between bitter and sweet. A person can tell the difference between true and false. And the thing is, a person who wants to figure out his life realizes that sometimes the truth is bitter.
It's bitter. It's true. So without blaming anyone, we're going to show that these two groups were equally...
The left, more enlightened revolutionary types, and the right, more religious, holding on to the
conservative, trying to maintain something. But both of them fell into this trap, right? There's a story here. We're not going to read all those. There's a lot of names in this episode. We're not going to read it. But there's a story about one guy. His name is Lilienblum, who was an Orthodox guy. And he was trying to build a bridge in a way. And immediately he was attacked by his community. He was they appointed some council. He was excommunicated. And he writes to his friend,
all of my acquaintance have distanced themselves from me. I cannot come to their homes, nor they to mine, for fear of their parents. If I should come to the house of prayer, I am regarded as one of God's accursed. No one greets me, nor am I allowed to join in a minion of 10 for prayer. When I walk in the town streets, I am surrounded by a flock of boys yelling at me, heretic, apostate.
That's exactly like the story that a friend of ours was telling. He lives in a very liberal community, and he's not. He's like a more of a Republican. And it's the same, like if you would describe it, right? All my liberal acquaintances have distanced themselves from me. I cannot come to their homes, nor they to mine, for fear of their parents. If I should come to the house of prayer or to the gym, I'm regarded as one's God's accursed. No one greets me, nor am I allowed to join a minion or a group.
A
Facebook group, right? When I walk in the town street, I'm surrounded by a flock of boys yelling at me, you know, Trump supporter. It's like...
Rip his MAGA hat off.
Yeah, it's... I mean, and then look at the other side.
And then the lefties. Okay, so here it's called the masculine.
The enlightened, right?
Okay, that would be today would be the left.
The left, yeah, the progressive, the ones who are trying to...
For their part, we're no better. Quote, in the eyes of the masculine, the religious not only embodied the evil of irrationality, but also inhibited progress. They did all they could to convince the authorities in Russia, Austria, and the autonomous regions of Poland that the spread of Hasidim, the religious, should be halted because it posed a political danger and even a threat of rebellion against the kingdom.
Basically,
what is a man to do?
I think everyone is really torn inside about things. It's like, I remember when I was growing up, there was a saying,
if you're not a liberal before you're 40, you don't have a heart. If you're not a Republican after 40, you don't have a brain.
Like, so, and it just goes to, it's like, it's both sides have something right. And then both sides have got something totally wrong. And yet they're both kind of digging into their holes.
And so the solution?
Above. Like everybody's got to let go of something and try to meet the other.
What a terrible life if you were a kid and you just behaved exactly like your parents. And what a terrible life if you were a parent and you just behaved like a kid. The family is a perfect example of how that process works.
It's true. And by the way, I understand both sides, because if you were an Orthodox a Hasidic Jew in Europe at that time, and you heard people saying, we have to reform the Jews, we have to... Right, we've joined the Russian society. Alexander's opened the gates. Let's join them. Let's leave behind all of that. Let's tear down the statues. Right, now, you'd freak out. I mean, it's your life. It, for better or for worse, that's where you came from. You can't just simply ignore it completely. You know, if you're the other ones, from the masculine, you would say, "What is this? This is like sand on the shore. It's weighing us down. It's you're pulling us back into the old world. All these weird businesses that you're engaged with. You're serving the capitalist elite. You're sticking to yourself as separatists. You're not mingling with the people."
When you said that these two groups have to I said, where's the solution between them? And you said, above. What does that mean?
You know what it means? I'll tell you what it means. It's like when you fight with your wife. I'm sorry, guys. It's a ready example. I think everybody knows, everybody's been, you know, married a while knows it. It's like, eventually, there are no winners in an argument. Either both lose, or both are willing to say, you know what? I'm not going to win this point. I'm not going to get this point right in the argument. We're feeling creatures. You know, we're sitting here, Seth, either we're feeling that we're connected about, you know, in something, or we're going to sit here and argue the fine points of something and hate each other for it. Like, if you want to argue and you love each other, that's fine. But if you're going to start making judgment on the other and blaming the other and separating yourself from the other because of that, then I think that's where the problem starts. It's like what's happening right now in America. America is burning because every group is convinced the other group is the devil. Half the country thinks the other half is insane and needs to be sent away, or worse. And by the way, speaking of history, you can see that every time when Jews started to fight between them, it doesn't matter what the situation was, because again, to remind our astute listeners, in Spain, the doors were not exactly open. You had to convert if you wanted to really kind of join the ranks. Here, there's no conversion. You can stay Jewish, you can do... It's as if there was no pressure whatsoever on the Jew, and yet that brought to even greater disunity among them. And this is happening at a time where seemingly the half that left is trying to create a more progressive, liberal society. Read this quote by Solzhenitsyn. Again, we said no names, but he's a famous one. You can look him up. Bottom of 102, the most powerful. That's how he talks about how Russia conducts itself towards the Jews.
The most powerful solitary support of a progressive society. It may have become so against the backdrop of oppression and pogroms, but nevertheless, In no other country was it so complete. Our broad-minded, freedom-loving intelligentsia had put beyond the boundaries of society and humanity not only anti-Semitism, but even one who did not support loudly and distinctly and especially the struggle for the equal rights of Jews was already considered a dishonest anti-Semite.
The point is that we're so stuck in our subjectivity that we think that anyone who's not seeing what we're seeing, who doesn't believe what we believe, feel what we feel, is crazy and should be...
Did you see that J.P. Spears one where he thinks, you know who that guy is? He's like a woke AF. He does a comedy thing. He's like a yoga guy or whatever. And
who, the redhead guy?
Yeah.
He does
one where, you know, I believe my opinions are facts. And
Exactly.
And I feel better for...
But listen, that's the thing. We tend to agree with what we already believe to be true. That's it.
So how are you relating it to what we're doing?
I'm just saying that the you know, this half of the Jews are right, this half of the Jews is right.
Okay.
Also in America, the liberals are saying some great things, and also the Republicans. And you can't possibly think that if you just replace one with the other, everything will be fine. No, the solution has to be with somehow uniting these worldviews. And, you know, regardless, because this, again, it's not a political show, I don't care about it. What I do care about is anti-Semitism. And he's saying here loud and clear.
When Jews turned against each other, anti-Semitism soon followed. At first, it manifested mostly in writing. Professor Bartol writes that, quote, the Jewish press in Russia had to cope with the anti-Semitic writings that grew more numerous and more strident in the 1870s and to come to the defense of Jewish society that was severely attacked from time to time.
And then it continues. And this is, and by the way, and this is, if you're a liberal Jew listening to this, listen carefully, because it's not you who's doing the thinking. You're part of a social thing that is happening here. And again, not a political show. Let's read it.
The Jewish Enlightenment were locked between conflicted feelings. On the one hand, they were Jews and therefore dreaded the perils of anti-Semitism.
Makes sense.
On the other hand, many members of the new Jewish intelligentsia agreed with the harsh criticism of the anti-Semites about the roles of the Jews in the Eastern European economy.
Sounds familiar?
Bernie, the solution that many of the Jewish Maskilim, the Enlightenment, found was to seek to change the Jew outside the boundary of the empire in agricultural colonies overseas. The idea, so instead of doing banking and whatever, let's
become farmers.
Okay.
Some place.
The idea of reforming the Jews through agriculture coincided with the growing awareness among the Jewish Maskilim that their tribe needed its own sovereign state, as we will see later in this chapter.
Yeah, leave Wall Street and all that and go work in some organic farm upstate and come to some demonstrations, you know, on the weekend, because we really need to change the climate here. Everybody's racist. Nobody's thinking of the little guy. We're thinking of the little guy and the transgender guy and the black guy and all the other guys, and we're the ones, and everyone else is the devil, and we should get rid of them. So half the country is terribly wrong. We should get rid of them, and I'll see you later after when I'm back from my farm upstate. Do you see a parallel?
It's unbelievable.
The thing is that I find alarming is that this has already happened. We're reliving something that's already happened, and we're walking right into the clutches of the same part in history, the part that ends badly for Jews. That's what I'm concerned about.
The teenager in the family, that's what I'm thinking about, is more like the left here. They always have the good idea. No, dad, you don't understand how life's supposed to be. You know, no, mom, you don't get it. But you need the cooperation with the adult in order to implement it correctly. So there has to be a good harmony between it, because this concept that all gays, all colors, all everyone should be included, we should all get along, and there shouldn't be this corruption that we see on the far... That's, of course, it's beautiful. But
how do you...
That's where it ends. It's beautiful. Now, the rest of how they think that they're going to implement it is completely corrupted.
That's why I think, by the way, this is a nice little side comment about nature, that don't you find interesting how your kids, they can form these connections, better connection with your parents. So the grandparents and the kids do well, whereas the kids and the parents have this opposition. And then when they have kids, you know, you will be doing well. It's all, nature has this balancing mechanism in place to make sure that if we have the family doing right, if our communities are working, if we're together, mechanism in place to protect it. Otherwise, the universal patterns are going to repeat itself. And I think that's a part here, Seth, where it gets bad. I mean, it's one thing if it just, you know, it stays on the level of a theory and debate around the Shabbat table, but it's not that, because we see that these same guys, the same guys who left,
violent all the time.
Because they join. I mean, they join the socialists, the communists. They become radical revolutionaries. One of the claims, by the way, of many anti-Semites, right? What's the problem with the Jews? The revolutionaries. They revolt against, they break the old, they destroy our values. Like I spoke to, you know, E. Michael Jones, you know, he said it. Jews are revolutionary. Ever since Christ, that's the problem. They're killing our values. They're killing our, the family value, this, and that. And you're sitting there thinking, Jews are not all terrible. I know some nice Jews. But then you think, well, the guy who invented porn, he was Jewish. The guys in Hollywood who are sowing all the violence and terrible, weird concepts of reality, a lot of them Jewish.
On the other side, the repression is, you know, for example, on the right-hand side, the kind of repression and the women have no rights and it's immoral to do anything but missionary position and oral sex is
legal.
And all those things. So it's, again, so there should be kind of some kind of sexual liberation and you should be able to do all these things with whoever, if between consensual people. But again, the implementation of it becomes completely corrupted.
Imagine it's like we're living inside a rubber band, right? And one side is trying to stay with one end of the rubber band and the other side is trying to pull in the other direction. They have to find a middle ground, otherwise it's going to break. And they're both right. There are both forces that are needed to bring us to the next step. Like the next step is not plus 12, let's say it's plus 6.
So I think here's the answer to the above thing. So as long as we let these things play out through history, as long as we now who are in the driver's seat of humanity, meaning it's 2020, it's clear the politicians don't have a clue what's going on, and now it's in the people's hands. If we let things play out the way they've always played out, as we've read so far up until this chapter, so you go back and forth between left, right, and it's always bloody and terrible. So to go above it means to somehow take these two sides and unite them in a new way so that you can go above that and it doesn't have to lead to a terrible, violent.
I want us to just get a couple of those excerpts here in this because I think people, it's important that people hear. We were kind of like, I feel like we're kind of soft, you know, when we read about the horrors of the temple. We're like, yeah, we didn't want to get into it. It's pornographic. People will read the book. But I think it's important to see that where it's going because this Professor Heberer, who analyzed the, he talks about the fascination of Jews with radicalism and revolutionary circles had grown. And by 1872, the process began, although it was not until the end of 1873 that their activity assumed a revolutionary coloring. So about a year, right? And that was 100 and something years ago. So imagine how fast things are moving now. In fact, and he says,
at the height of their emancipation in Tsarist Russia, many Jews became so radicalized that some of them became outright terrorists. This one.
Read about Zuckerman, for example. Okay, this guy, Zuckerman.
For example, he joined a certain terrorist organization called the People's Will in 1870. And served as its principal printer of underground publications. This organization consistently attacked the highest levels of government in Russia and eventually, in March 1881, assassinated Tsar Alexander II himself, who had been so welcoming and opening to the Jews.
The guy who invited the Jews to come out of their shtetls and join the ranks of society. As Jews.
So the Jews become comfortable and then they join into the society and then they start to feel
the plight of the little guy and the inequality that exists in
they
society.
They see the inequality and...
And they join, they start a revolution. And at the end, they kill the guy who brought him out. Yeah. There's another list. So there's a few other names here. Mark Andreevich Natanzon. All these guys, they
university students.
Yeah, this continues in the universities, exactly, which we see here in America as well, by the way.
So the group that committed the assassinations of the Tsar, that's what ignited this storms of the South, inflicting horrendous suffering on all of the Jews in the southern parts of Russia and parts of Poland. And this engendered the Zionist movement.
Oh, this episode was supposed to be about the beginning of Zionism. And I think we're kind of close to the end here, but I want us to, before we close the episode, I want us to read...
Your favorite answer.
Yeah. I want to jump a couple of pages. I want to say a couple of things that I think that the inner desires of everyone involved, they're all right. Right? Everybody's right. That's how they say. Nobody wakes up in the morning and say, we're going to do terrible things. You know, I'm sure Antifa people are not waking up in the morning saying, we're going to do some terrible, I'm going to be a bad person. And even Trump, that everybody loves to hate, I'm sure he doesn't wake up in the morning and says, I'm going to be a bad person. He's doing what he thinks he's doing in order to do things right. I think that's what every person in the world does, unless you're mentally... right? Not there. Some people will say the president is like that, but that's besides the point. The point is everybody's right, except we're not trying to be right together. That's a problem. And there's this guy, I want you to read, Aaron Samuel Lieberman, leading of the Revolutionary Vilna Circle. Listen to his vision, right? What did he wish? He wished...
Nothing more than that under the pressure of popular socialist workers' revolution, all national divisions should disappear. Imagine there's no...
Right.
Should disappear together with the capitalist monopoly and all of its expression in the life of humanity. Indeed, like all his fellow socialist Jews, he rejoiced in the prospect that the Jews, because of their cosmopolitan character and their ever-increasing assimilationist tendency, would pioneer the integration of all mankind into a worldwide, nationless workers' republic.
And until then...
It was necessary, especially in Russia, to speed up this process, in that propaganda must begin by uprooting national pride and exclusiveness.
Again, sounds so contemporary.
So contemporary.
Nothing wrong with the vision. How do we get there?
Kill half of the people is what they're saying.
That's exactly the thing. I think that's what freaked people out. I think that's what brought on the Cold War. That's what freaked people out here. When you think of the idea of communism, it's amazing. Be together, take care of each other's needs. That's amazing. But how do you go from...
I can't tell if you're far right wing or far left wing.
It's good. The plan has worked. You know, but as the title in the book says, a Jew is a Jew is a Jew. It doesn't matter what side you're on. When the trouble starts, everyone just turns against you. Whether you're the enlightened one, the Hasidic one, everybody... I think, and that's the thing that scares me right now, and what's happening here, man, in this country right now. Everybody thinks they're marching on the right side of the... political divide, waving the flag of whatever you want the flag, it doesn't matter. When everything plunges into chaos, eventually the Jews are the ones who get shipped off. No one else, not the Irish, not the blacks, not the this, not the that, the Jews.
However traumatic the pogroms did not appear out of the blue, they were a long time coming. While the Jews are not the culprits or the perpetrators of the crimes against them, the linkage between their disdain for each other and the nation's aversion toward them is plainly evident, not just in the case of Russia, but throughout Jewish history. In Germany, this will become even more evident and infinitely more disastrous. The continual obliviousness of Jews to their role of setting an example of unity and their incessant engagement in divisive activities bears harsh consequences and always leads to tragedy. We Jews must recognize our responsibility to behave in such a manner that will produce affinity towards us rather than enmity. And we can achieve this only by striving to unite among us rather than by patronizing, deriding, and detesting other Jews merely for disagreeing with us.
Here, the book is saying it again. And I hate to say, but I'm starting to see that maybe the book is right. And I think we just kind of glossed over it. But if you read through history, everybody knows, though, if you Google the storms in the South, be like, oh, this sudden onset of pogrom on unsuspecting Jews.
Suddenly they hated the Jews.
Right. We were just minding our own business, you know, and suddenly everybody wants to kill us. Well, what about the disunity? What about the bickering? What about the ostracizing one another and spreading terrible rumors about one another, one half against the other? And what about joining the revolutionaries and killing the czar that brought you out of the ghettos in the first place? Where did that go? We don't like to look out of the box, and that's a problem.
We have come to one of your...
Yeah,
one of your favorites.
The patron saint of the show, of the program, Vasily Shulgin, the renowned anti-Semite. Yeah, so before you read that, let's just say that thank you for listening to the Jew Function, the only podcast that's trying to find the root of anti-Semitism.
We're doing it.
We're finding the root of anti-Semitism according to the law of nature, and we're going to solve it. Because by hearing about it, you're already starting to be part of the solution. I really feel it. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube at the Jew Function. You know, it's all free. We don't need your money; just need your heart. So we'll close with this quote. If you think that it's all terrible, it's not all terrible. There is a ray of light here.
This is by Vasily Shulgin, an avowed anti-Semite. He said,
in order to surrender to the Jews as leaders, in order to calmly and joyfully look at Jewry capturing the commanding heights of the psyche, something more is needed. One must feel their moral superiority over oneself. One must feel that they are not only stronger, but also better than us. We must feel that they are imbued with wisdom, which always leads to love. In one aspect or another, they must be above us, not individual Jews, but Jews as general, in general, as a nation, Jews as a race.
Let's read it again, if you don't mind.
I'm scared of reading. I don't want to sound...
No, but this is a good one.
In order to surrender to the Jews as leaders, in order to calmly and joyfully look at Jewry capturing the commanding heights of the psyche, something more is needed. One must feel their moral superiority over oneself. We must feel that they are not only stronger, but also better than us. We must feel that they are imbued with wisdom, which always leads to love. In one aspect or another, they must be above us. Not individual Jews, but Jews in general, as a nation, Jews as a race.
Wisdom that always leads to love. That's, I like that vision. Thank you.